The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Rookie Magazine. There is a lot of reporting on death these days, which is a very heavy topic to hear about and also to experience. So, this week, I've chosen articles that talk about self-care and dealing with grief, which I hope you will find helpful. The first article, A Realistic Guide to Self-Care. How to take care of yourself without face masks, a budget, or that much time. This is by Stephanie Kennert and published May 2nd, 2018. I'm a new mom, and in a lot of ways, it makes me feel like I'm back in high school. I've been thrust into this new world where I feel like I should know what I'm doing because a million other people have been here and survived. There are tests and pop quizzes I'm totally unprepared for. I'm constantly behind on everything. I'm sleep deprived, and taking care of myself, even basic stuff like laundry and showers, has taken a back seat to my new responsibilities. It reminds me a lot of a seemingly never-ending finals week and college application period. And people keep saying to me the thing that you might hear a lot during your own stressful periods. Some self-care would really be good for you right now. I know it's meant to be helpful, but suggesting self-care to someone lacking in time and resources is as effective as telling someone having a panic attack to just relax. In moments like these, self-care just feels like another thing I'm failing at. When I first started hearing the term self-care, I was glad that people were talking about the need to slow down before we melt down. Taking care of your emotional well-being is extremely important, but the concept of self-care has been elevated in such a way that it's become unattainable. It's become a buzzword, loosely translating to splurge on yourself. The beauty industry has been reframed as the wellness industry. Brands that used to thrive by encouraging self-hatred now recommend the same products as complementary to self-love. What was intended as a refuge from the pace and pressures of life under late capitalism has become a new skill to master and to perform mastery of online. If this definition of self-care doesn't make you feel any more relaxed, you're not alone. I want to talk about what self-care means in the context of mental health and what it could look like if you don't have the funds, time, or ability to relax. What does self-care really mean? When I was in high school, self-destruction, whether in the form of physically hurting myself, drinking to excess, doing drugs, or losing myself in a bad relationship, was the only way I knew how to deal with feeling overwhelmed, anxious, or depressed. My senior year was rife with those feelings as I overworked myself at school, grappled with the fallout of an abusive relationship, tried to figure out college, tried to graduate early, worked a job, and volunteered 2 to 3 times a week at a domestic violence agency. It wasn't until I got into a car accident the night before a big test that I broke down, confessing to my parents a 4-year habit of self-injury. After that, my mom encouraged me to start taking mental health days. She let me ditch school and watch TV or sleep or whatever when I needed to. She believed that when you are emotionally run down, you need to rest and recover the way you do when you're sick. Just as a cold can become a sinus infection or pneumonia, unchecked stress can snowball. The mental toll can become physical. Self-care alone did not resolve my habits of self-destruction, but mental health days helped to assuage the short-term stress and anxiety I felt that week. That made me better equipped to begin addressing my more deeply ingrained mental health and self-harm issues, which then required years of therapy and emotional labor. Self-care is not an effective replacement for either of those. And if what you're going through feels more meaningful than stress, please consider talking to your guardian about it, seeking help from a therapist, or consulting a mental health resource. This guide will focus on self-care as an antidote to the stress and anxiety that come from being under pressure, like finals week, dealing with an unknown, like waiting to hear about college or a job, or facing a transition, like moving somewhere new. Let's define it as a temporary solution to temporary circumstantial stress and anxiety. There, doesn't that sound more relaxing already? You're just having a hard time and you're going to get through it. Now, let's talk about some practical roadblocks that make self-care seem out of your reach. How can I practice self-care on a low or non-existent budget? Good news. Massages, facials, mani-pedis, and spa days are not the only ways to relax. Besides, if you're struggling financially, spending money on expensive treatments may not help your anxiety. Shopping as a distraction can become addictive, creating a new source of stress. My first ever article for Rookie was a list of things to do when you're feeling stressed, anxious, or angry. There are things you can do alone or with friends, and you can pick and choose what feels right, what will get you down from this particular moment, or what combination of things will bring you back into yourself. Some of the more immediate actions from that list, which you can do for no money, clean or rearrange your room, sing or scream at the top of your lungs, make a playlist and listen to it on repeat, journal all of your feelings for no one to see, make a collage, check your horoscope, go to a local park or playground, break stuff you're okay with breaking, cry it out. There are so many more options than it seems in the moment. The article How to Be Alone by Christina Burton also has a list of stuff you can do solo for free. Remember, too, that self-care doesn't have to equal alone time. It might help you to get out of your own head by playing with a little sibling or a neighbor or seeing a friend who's happy to just watch Netflix or paint nails without talking a bunch. If you use social media a lot, it may be hard to do any of these activities without wondering if they're worth sharing. There's that pressure to perform self-care again, begging the question, who is it really for? I recommend using the traditional definition of play as a barometer for the activities you do and whether or not you share them. True play is an action carried out for its own sake and not for reward or recognition, or as a means to an end. It's just as important now as it was when you were a kid, and it feels totally great and mindless. You know what else is free? Quitting or taking a break from social media. If it feels like more of a time suck and an anxiety driver than connecting or emotional outlet. And if you're like, cool, I still just really want to take a luxurious bath, you can totally do that for cheap. DIY this $10 bath bomb, for example. Hot water plus good old Mr. Bubbles and or Epsom salts, which are cheap at any drugstore, can work wonders. An ounce of lavender oil goes a long way and is also available at drugstores for cheap. I know luxurious products look like they're scientifically engineered to relax you more, but flower petals and glitter are just there for fun. If you covet something you really can't afford, like a massage, ask for it as a gift. How do I practice self-care if I literally don't have the time? A long bath may sound wonderful, but what if I really do have a week full of commitments that I can't get out of? What if you really literally can't afford not to work whenever possible? You can't take an afternoon to chill. You need small ways to get through every day and manage the unrelenting hum of stress. Here's what you're going to do. Number one, reschedule anything that isn't critical. Your friends will understand. Who hasn't been in this situation? And you'll have a much better time hanging out if one of you isn't secretly wishing they were asleep. If you have a hard time turning people down, Mecha Fraser Carroll's Guide to Saying No might be helpful. Number two, see if there's anything on your to-do list that you can delegate. Is it a group project? Have you taken on anything that doesn't actually have to be done by you right now? If there's anything you need help with or can share with a classmate or coworker, there's no harm in reaching out. Say that you underestimated the workload and that it might need some more brain power to get done in time. The other person can always say no, and calling them up or sending a text will only take a minute. Number 3, don't answer non-urgent texts or calls till you're done with your paper, studying, application, or whatever. Putting your phone on airplane mode helps with this. All those text exchanges and Instagram checks might make all the work feel less lonely, but right now, they're adding up to what could be an hour-long reward at the end of the day. You're creating time. Number 4. If possible, do self-care activities while you're working, like mindless crafts or stretches. Tavi's example, using coloring books while talking on the phone have made stressful conversations a lot more manageable for me. Having something to do with my hands helps me focus if a discussion is intellectually challenging and to stay calm if the call is emotionally distressing. Number 5. If an expanse of time is not magically opening up anytime soon, take short breaks. Getting outside, walking around the block, or sitting in the sun for 5 to 20 minutes and doing nothing else will refresh you so hard you'll think you were gone for longer. It will also make you more productive than if you just keep going, getting tunnel visioned about your assignment and crawling across the finish line. Number 6. Find ways to get extra sleep. Go to bed little kid earlier for a night or even a week. Sleep in when you can. If there's a room you have access to at school where you can nap during a free period, bring a cozy sweatshirt to use as a pillow or blanket. Go to the school nurse or the counselor and say that you need to lie down for a while. Sometimes an hour or two of extra sleep will make all the difference, especially when you sneak some in every day for a little while. And finally, number 7, seek help or advice about how to carve out time for yourself from a friend, a trusted adult in your life, or a mental health professional. Sometimes you simply can't see which things aren't crucial or what you can delegate. My psychological makeup is such that I have a really, really hard time letting go. I think I will disappoint others or something won't be good enough if I don't do it myself. I worry if I reschedule something that I'm just prolonging the stress. I need outside perspective on this. The gentle reminders that turning something in late is not as terrible as physically making myself sicker, that I'll be a better friend and produce better work when I am rested, and that things won't look as daunting after I've recovered a little bit. Sometimes all it takes to figure out my priorities is a quick vent to a friend. More recently, I needed an hour-long session with my therapist, which I left feeling uncertain, but a few hours later, I knew what I needed to do. Remember, this extra busy period will end, even if it's not soon. I'm sorry, and I hope it clears up ASAP. Now, let's say you do have the time and the dollars to spend, but you just can't slow down. How do I practice self-care if I cannot relax? I experienced this a lot in the past year. I would get a pedicure or run myself a bath and then spend the whole time thinking about other responsibilities. That would make me feel even worse. What's wrong with me? I can't even relax. I should work harder to take care of myself. These are the guilty thoughts that run through my head constantly. It wasn't until I started writing them down that I realized how messed up they are. I mean, you should work harder to take care of yourself. The last thing I need is another task on the to-do list. When self-care becomes a chore, it no longer feels good. My answer here isn't something you can do, just something to remember. Relaxation is a slow process, not one giant catharsis. Most people's brains do not come with a switch where they can shut off all the noise and immediately become a limp noodle. I've learned the hard way that I have to get things done before I can relax. Meet the deadline, finish the project, get to the end of the week. And even then, there's a wind down period. If my brain has been going 100 miles per hour, I can't just hit the brakes. Anytime I've scheduled something like a spa day immediately after a deadline, it doesn't feel like the reward I envisioned because I'm still amped up. I need time to catch up on sleep and veg out in front of the TV or computer first. Then, a day or maybe a week later, I'm ready for a full-scale relaxation. Maybe you're the same way. I have also learned, and this was huge for me, that I am not a flawed or broken person because I can't relax on cue. My relaxation efforts are not meaningless even if my mind is still going while I'm sitting in the bathtub. It's not a waste of time, or money, if that is where the guilt can really compound for me, if I don't feel like a brand new person when I leave the nail salon. It was a first step. Finally, remember that there is not a one-size-fits-all prescription for self-care. It's okay if yoga or meditation doesn't do it for you. Nothing is wrong with you. What you need can totally change with the situation or where you are in life. I actually hated yoga until my mid-20s, but now I find it relaxing. I've gone through phases where meditation works and phases where it just stresses me out because I can't empty my mind. I have a stack of coloring books that I haven't touched, even though it seemed like a brilliant idea. But what's the rush? Again, self-care is a short-term antidote to short-term stress and anxiety. You will practice it your whole life, but let's just make this moment, these feelings, and the pressure to just stop them a little less intimidating. Self-care isn't meant to serve us, not give us a new way to feel bad about ourselves. Oh, I'm sorry. Self-care is meant to serve us, not give us a new way to feel bad about ourselves. Let's try to release that and reclaim what makes us feel good. So that was A Realistic Guide to Self-Care by Stephanie Kuhnert. I hope I'm saying that correctly. The next article is titled, How to Build a Grief Support System. There are people and outlets to help you carry that weight, but you have to be the one to find them before it gets too heavy. This article is by Rebecca Hallgren, and it was published August 13th, 2018. Grieving the death of a loved one is like living in a dream where you're asleep, but life goes on without you. I'm just waking up from it, but sometimes it still feels like I'm out of my own body, watching my younger self search for the sanity I had before the start of 2013, when my parents told me my dad had a malignant brain tumor. I couldn't grasp this information until his death forced me to, only a few months later. I was 12, going on 13, and still pictured my dad as the one person who would sing the song Erie Canal to me till I fell asleep. The New York public high school teacher who would share his lesson plans with me. This was no longer him, and I could not accept that because I did not get to say goodbye. My dad left as quickly as his hair fell out. I needed help, as in someone to talk to. In some of my first experiences with counseling, I was continually told that I should be done with the whole grieving period. That was from a counselor recommended by a family friend. One time, in the first months without my dad, my mom and I went to a clinic in our neighborhood. We met with a therapist who compared the loss of my dad to that of her dog. She felt proud of her comparison, sitting high and mighty on her plastic-covered chair. Needless to say, we did not see her again. I gave up on finding someone to talk to or to talk with, and decided that I didn't want to process anything. Not long after I gave up, this mindset blew up in my face. Refusing to process my emotions eventually caused me to lose control of them. Grief should not come with a timer that just keeps ticking and telling you to move on. When you lose someone close to your heart, you will keep missing them, and that is not a problem, nor is it your fault. However, it does help to have someone to help you process your emotions and to learn how you can help yourself when you're alone. There are also ways to build a support system beyond that trusted individual. Here's what helped me, and I hope it helps you too. Number one, find a grief counselor. I did eventually find invaluable help from counselors and therapists, so don't be discouraged by my earliest experience or by the trial and error it will take to find the fit you deserve. If your school doesn't have a counselor or you don't want to see them, look up nearby hospitals and call to ask if they have grief counseling. Many hospitals, like mine, will not refuse patients based on financial status, and if you can't afford therapy, they may still help you find the care you need. The people I see do not try to belittle me or guilt me for the ways that I'm still grieving. They are helping me process the past so it will not hurt my future. They've shown me things I can do on my own, like exercising and listening to music to find peace and strength within myself. If you don't live by a hospital or have a way to get to one, you can get set up with a counselor at a hotline, like BetterHelp, which comes with a weekly fee, although you can apply for financial aid, or Crisis Text Line, which is free. If you feel suicidal, 1-800-273-TALK, or 8255, is available 24 hours a day from anywhere in the U.S., and suicide.org has a list of resources for outside the U.S. I know it seems impossible that anyone else could understand exactly what you're going through, but trust me when I say that they will still be able to provide guidance that you can't create for yourself. Number two, get involved in a club or activity. Not all support will deal with your grief directly. Even if you're not sure what you're passionate about, having a group of people you see regularly with some kind of activity or task at hand will make you feel less alone. The year my dad passed away, I got involved in my middle school's drama department. With the help of my drama teacher, I adapted the play The Importance of Being Earnest with a musical set in the 1990s. This helped me drive in more ways than one. The drama club offered not just artistic support, but emotional support. Surround yourself with people who care about you. They may be easier to find if you're working as a team or in collaboration than if you take on the daunting task of just making more friends. Number three, find a support group. I know you might not want to Google support group near me, like you're looking for a restaurant, or talk about yourself in front of strangers, but the fact that it is convenient to find and read people's accounts of a support group is something to take advantage of. You don't have to talk any more than what makes you comfortable. And hearing from other people who are going through helps tremendously with the feelings of alienation that come with grief. I remember trying to attend a support group not even a month after my dad died. I just could not do it. Losing my dad felt as though I was stuck in the middle of a moving carousel. My feelings wouldn't let up long enough for me to process them. Eventually, I realized I could not stop the carousel and had to call out for help. I went to Gilda's Club in New York City, which helps families that are going through or have gone through a loved one's cancer treatment. It was filled with therapists who did not just go on their phone while I was speaking, and who actually listened to what I was saying before guiding me to ways of understanding my emotions. Friends and family members could also be a support group if you are comfortable talking with them about what you're going through. I remember hearing this corny saying the entire time I was going into counselors' offices. It gets better over time. Now, that saying is rather loose-ended, don't you think? It aims to be helpful and is heading in the right direction, but you want to know how. How is it going to get better? The pain of losing a loved one won't simply go away. After 5 years, I still miss my dad every single day. The saying should actually be, over time, you learn to better understand your emotions and find ways to manage them. The pain of losing a loved one can make it hard to do that all on your own. There are people and outlets to help you carry that weight, but you have to be the one to find them before it gets too heavy. You don't have to be alone, full of emotions that are difficult to make sense of. I know it may not seem like it immediately, but there are so many different hands reaching out for you to hold on to. You only have to choose which one.
So that was How to Build a Grief Support System by Rebecca Halgren, posted August 13th, 2018, but still very relevant to today. And just to summarize some of the points from there, she talked about finding a grief counselor, and she referenced some resources. I know she mentioned BetterHelp, the crisis text line. There's also Talkspace that has come out recently that I hear a lot about. And then I also wanted to point out from the previous article that I read, The Realistic Guide to Self-Care, that she mentioned another article by Mecha Frazier Carroll called The Guide to Saying No. And that's spelled M as in man, I-C-H-A, Fraser, F-R-A-Z-E-R, Carroll. Mecha Frazier Carroll. Just wanted to make sure that those resources were put out there. It's a lot of heavy information in the news these days, so I wanted to highlight those. And in addition to all the heavy information in the news, it's possible that some of our listeners are dealing with their own encounters with coronavirus or other events that are going on and having personal experiences with those. So that's why I thought these articles would be important. So please do practice self-care and work on building a support system. And whether that includes finding a grief counselor, finding a club or activity that's possible to do at this time, creating or finding a support group, taking the time to clean, adult coloring books or children coloring books, whichever may be helpful for you. I hope we all do our best to stay healthy at this time. Well, that is my time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you have enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.